But I remember Elvis Presley sang that song and recorded that, and he did a beautiful job of it. We're glad to have Tyrone back. How many hours in the air? 21? Or 21 from the time you left till you got back? 23? Well, come see me about 5 days from now when your days and nights all get sorted out. We're glad you're back. Appreciate the ministry that you had, and look forward to hearing more about that in the future. In Philemon verse 9, Paul said he was an old man. He's in jail at Rome, although he enjoys a certain amount of freedom. And in his life, he's made some friends, and he's made some enemies. And as is so often true, as you get older, your friends mean more and more to you. Partially because some of them are gone, and the world is a lonelier place. And partially because you've learned to value relationships more than you value accomplishments. In jail, he has some time to write some letters, four of which were Colossians, Philemon, Ephesians, and Philippians. Two friends, Tychicus and Onesimus, deliver three of those letters on one trip, Colossians, Ephesians, and Philemon. And when the church at Colossae received their scroll, their epistle, their letter from Paul, as they unrolled the final coils of the parchment from the scroll, a curious list of the names of eight men who had each labored with Paul unfolded. How many of you brought your Bibles tonight? Hold them up. If you would, turn to Colossians chapter 4. And these, among these eight men's names, are included quite a wide variety of personalities and talents, ranging from a medical doctor to a runaway slave. That's pretty wide variety, isn't it? From an effective church planter to a failed missionary. And Paul expresses their usefulness and effectiveness to himself and to the church. He expresses his appreciation to them. And the reason that I want to address this lesson tonight is peculiarly because of myself. Because as I am aware of my own shortcomings and inabilities, then I'm encouraged by Colossians chapter 4. Because this section says to me, God does not use me because I'm flawless, nor does He reject me because I'm flawed. God uses everyone who will submit to Him. And He uses the peculiar talents and abilities that He's given to us. And so I'd like to take a few minutes tonight and look at these, just briefly, at these eight men who served with Paul. And if you'll read along with me, I'm in Colossians chapter 4, verse 7. And if I mispronounce her name, well, then you can correct me later, but I've always pronounced it. Tychicus will tell you all the news about me. He's a dear brother, a faithful minister, and fellow servant in the Lord. I'm sending him to you for the express purpose that you may know about our circumstances and that he may encourage your hearts. And so I'm going to give every one of these guys a little handle, okay, a little title. I'll call Tychicus the man under authority. Five times in the New Testament, Tychicus is mentioned. And it tells us that he accompanied Paul through Macedonia and Greece. And those places, if you're interested, are Acts 20 and 4 and Ephesians 6:21, Colossians 4, 7, 2 Timothy 4, 12, and Titus chapter 3, verse 12. So in four epistles plus the history book of the New Testament Acts, this man, Tychicus, is mentioned. And interestingly, he's not what we would call the principal evangelist, but rather, he's a messenger boy. He takes messages for Paul to different places. Three different times in these five places where he's mentioned, Paul will say, either I have sent or I am sending Tychicus to a certain place. It takes a special person to play second fiddle. It takes a special person to be able to see the value in others and want to be a part of that particular ministry. What kind of man was he? Well, he was obviously the kind of guy that could accept orders and carry out assignments from others. And he went gladly and he went cheerfully. The Lord needs, it seems to me, a few leaders like the Apostle Paul. I don't know how many the church can stand, but it needs a few. But for every mover and shaker like Paul was, you need 100 like this man. For every person who goes out and he proclaims a message and he goes where no man's ever gone before, you need 100 people to come behind him and mop up. Because if I have Paul pegged correctly, if you got in his way, he would run you over. And he wouldn't take a lot of time to go back and pat you and see how you fared after he had run you over. And so a person like this, if I have this correctly, he needs people to come along behind him and pick people up and dust them off and say, hey, everything's going to be all right. Let's realize that this man that just ran you over, he has a place in the Lord's kingdom. And so he's not our enemy. And even though he doesn't act like you want him to act, and even though he's not like you and maybe not like you and me, then he has an incredible place in the Lord's kingdom. And Tychicus was that kind of person. He was a man who was at Paul's disposal whenever he needed messages taken to different places. And so as I think about different ones that I've known in the kingdom, are you the kind of person who prefers to work behind the scenes and not be out front? God needs you. Paul needed this man. Then secondly, there's Onesimus in verse 9 of Colossians 4. He is coming with Onesimus, our faithful and dear brother, who is one of you. They will tell you everything that is happening here. So obviously the Colossian Christians were really concerned about Paul, and they hadn't had news for a long time, and they wanted some news from him. And so all the way from verse 7, through 9, he's saying, when these two men come with this letter, then they're going to tell you what's going on here. They'll give you the information. But you remember Onesimus, and I'll call Onesimus a man with a record. He was a runaway slave, you remember? And evidently, he had a poor attitude. Perhaps he was insolent and rebellious. And among the letters that Onesimus will be taking is the letter to whom? Philemon, his master. Now that had to be a matter of some concern on his part. For a runaway slave to come back to his master, he knows what could happen to him, doesn't he? And you can go and read that letter that Paul wrote to Philemon, and Paul pulled a few chips on Philemon, didn't he? He said, I could order you to do what you ought to do, but I'm not going to because I want you to do it out of love. And remember, anything that he owes you because of he's run away from you, then put it on my tab and I'll pay you. But remember how much you owe me. And he just kept going back and forth in that letter like that. And he said, I want you to receive him back not as a slave, but as a brother. And so you think about this Onesimus and his relationship to Paul and Philemon's 11, it says, he formerly was useless to you, but now he has become useful both to you and to me. And so evidently, as this letter is delivered to the Colossian Christians, then Onesimus has come back home, because evidently Philemon lives in Colossae. He says he is, Onesimus is one of you. He comes from among you. And Paul had said to Philemon, I'm sending him who is my very heart back to you. He said, I wanted to keep him because he was of great service to me while I was here in prison. But he belongs to you, and so I'm sending him back to you with the expectation that you're going to treat him right. And so you think about this man, and it would be really interesting if we had a photograph of these guys, wouldn't it? But we don't. We know just a little snippets here and there, little bits and pieces here and there. But how could an insolent, rebellious, runaway slave ever be useful in the kingdom? I mean, if you were picking somebody to share the gospel with, would you pick a runaway slave? Yet Paul describes him as a faithful, dear brother. And in Philemon, he describes him as a son to himself, as an old man. And so he converted him while he was in prison, evidently, or at least in that time period. And now Onesimus has hung with him. He stays with him. And now Paul has said, you got to go back. You got to do what's right. As much as I want you to be here with me and as much as I love you, you got to go back. And so he said, I'll write a letter. And then in the end of it, he knew Philemon well, because he said, I'd like for you to prepare a guest room for me, because I hope to come and stay with you before very long. God can use people with questionable backgrounds. That's good news, isn't it? And regardless of what your friends say or even what your own heart says, God can use you if you'll turn your life over to him. And I'm reminded of 1 John chapter 3, verse 20, where John says, this is how we set our hearts at rest in his presence whenever our hearts condemn us. And I don't know why that appeals to me so much. Have you ever, in thinking about your relationship to God, do you know so much about yourself that you tend to think, if God really knew this about me, he wouldn't want me? He says, this is how we set our hearts at rest in his presence whenever our hearts condemn us. This is how. God is greater than our hearts, and he knows everything. And you think, that's what I was afraid of. You know, I wish he didn't know everything about me. But if your heart is right, that takes precedent over everything else, doesn't it? And if God knows your heart, is that not a comfort to us as Christians? If you're trying to hide something from God, and you're trying to get something slipped through the cracks, and you've got secret closeted sins here that you don't want anybody to know about, the fact that God knows everything is a source of fear. But if your heart is right, and you really want to please God, you want God to know that, don't you? You want God to know how much it means to you that you want to please him. And so here we have a person with a pretty sordid background. And yet, Paul, he was useful to Paul, and Paul considered him to be a son and a friend. And then thirdly, there's Aristarchus, verse 10, my fellow prisoner Aristarchus sends you his greetings. And I called Aristarchus the burden bearer. Colossians chapter 4, verse 10 said that he was a prisoner for his faith, just like Paul was. In Acts chapter 19, Aristarchus was accompanying Paul in Ephesus. You remember whenever they started preaching about the goddess Diana, and that she was no god, and Demetrius the silversmith and all of his friends got upset? You remember that? And they got everybody stirred up, and they came to the town square, and people didn't even know why they were there, but there was this great uproar that was going on. And they were looking for Paul, but they couldn't find Paul, and so they grabbed his friend, Aristarchus. And it was Aristarchus who was taken into the center of that mob. And Paul wanted to go and address the crowd, but the Christians there compelled him and begged him not to go into there because they were afraid that he'd be killed. And so here was Aristarchus that was taken in Paul's place when Paul was out of reach. And then in Acts chapter 27, verse 2, on the third missionary journey, whenever he was on his third missionary journey and then he left to go to Rome, guess who one of his companions was? Aristarchus was. And so you think about what happened to him on that voyage to Rome and the shipwreck and so forth, and Aristarchus was one of his companions and was there with him whenever he arrived in Rome. He must have been a tremendous help and a comfort to Paul with him on his third missionary journey, and the difficulties that he had. To have a friend with you is really important, isn't it? To be by yourself is really tough. In fact, Tyrone and I talked some about this the last few weeks. Because the last time he went, he had a companion with him, had a friend, and it makes a difference. When you're in difficulty and you're by yourself, it really, really gets lonely. Whenever you have somebody to stand by your side and encourage you, and there are two of you, it just feels like a world of difference. And so here he had somebody who stayed with him through this difficulty. He was a faithful, loyal brother who was loyal and supportive in many dark hours. Aristarchus, the burden bearer. And then there was Mark. And he says, in verse 10, my fellow prisoner Aristarchus sends you greetings, as does Mark, the cousin of Barnabas. You have received instructions about him. If he comes to you, welcome him. Now, why do you think Paul would have had to send some early instructions about John Mark in case he showed up there? You remember why, don't you? Because whenever, in Acts chapter 13, Barnabas the evangelist set out from Antioch on the first missionary journey to establish churches, he took two novices with him. One of them was Paul. The other was John Mark. And they set sail from the mainland and went to the island of Crete. And they went to two places, one on the east side, one on the west side, and then when they sailed from there and hit the mainland of Asia Minor, then John Mark said, I want to go home to Mama. He went home. And it made Paul mad. And when Paul got mad at you, he didn't get over it easy, evidently, did he? And so whenever the time came for them to go back, and they decided after they had returned, they decided they would go back and revisit these churches and see how they were doing. Then Barnabas said, okay, let me go get John Mark. And Paul said, what? He's not going with me. He's already shown his colors. I have no interest. I have no place in my life for babysitting somebody. And if you want to take him, you take him and I'll find somebody else. And so he did, didn't he? And they parted ways. And so Paul selected Silas and John Mark and Barnabas went on a missionary journey also. We don't know anything about it, but one day we'll get to hear about that one also. And I'm thankful that God gives us chances whenever we fail, aren't you? And I'm thankful that He gives us people in our life who won't give up on us when we make a mistake, aren't you? I've had people like that, and I have people like that in my life. And they make all the difference in the world. And I hope that you will have someone like that in your life, and I hope you will be someone like that in your life. That when other people give up on somebody, then you'll be by their side. Even when people criticize you and say you ought to leave him alone, that you'll be by their side, and you'll not give up on them. And it's a really neat thing, and I know that you know this, but Paul writing at least what appears to be the very last epistle that we have recorded that he wrote, 2 Timothy, and he says at the end, you remember, get Mark and bring him with you because he's helpful to me in my ministry. And I have to say, that's one of the most encouraging things as you think about the development of a young man who made a really, he made a foolish decision, a mistake in his life. And had it only been up to Paul, then he would have held his feet to the fire, I assume, for the rest of his life. But Barnabas rescued him. Barnabas took him under his wing. And so Mark, here he will write that Mark, he wants to send greetings. Mark is the man with the second chance. And then fifthly, is a fellow that we don't hear of anywhere else in the Bible. Jesus Justice, it says. Jesus, who is called Justice, also sends greetings. These are the only Jews among my fellow workers for the kingdom of God, and they have proved a comfort to me. And so most of the fellow workers with Paul were what? Gentiles. But there were a few Jews who had the courage to stay with Paul. Now, why would it have taken courage to stay with Paul? Because the Jews despised Paul's ministry, didn't they? The Judaizers always followed him everywhere he went, trying to take his life. And if they couldn't get him, then they'd pick off his friends, wouldn't they? And so if you were a friend to Paul, and particularly if you were a Jew, then your life was jeopardized. And we don't know anything else about this fellow, Jesus Justice. He had a good name. We know that he was a Jew willing to serve Gentiles. And I would just say, for us as Christians, as an application, that sometimes we may have this list of duties that we feel like are somewhat beneath us. And we're not going to pick up after other people, and we're not going to do this, and we're not going to lock up, and we're not going to clean up, and we're not going to do this. We come, you know, when the food's prepared and when everything's just right, and then we're some one of the first ones out, we're not going to be the servant on the end of this. We're not going to do the hard work. There are some things that are beneath us. And we have this list of preferred tasks, and if somebody comes and asks us in just the right manner, then we might do that. Some of us, consequently, remain unused. And if you'll pardon it, we end up being useless, not being used. And this guy, Jesus Justice, was a fellow worker and a comforter. And he was of the Jewish origin and stayed with Paul, evidently. And then, sixthly, is Epaphras. And it's really interesting what Epaphras is known for. He says, Epaphras, who is one of you and a servant of Jesus Christ, sends greetings. He is always wrestling in prayer for you that you may stand firm in all the will of God, mature and fully assured. I vouch for him that he is working hard for you and for those at Laodicea and Hierapolis. Now, there's something really interesting about this guy, Epaphras. Epaphras was the one who started the church at Colossae. You can go back to Colossians chapter 1, verse 6 through 8. He's the one who started the church. And evidently he started churches. If not started, then he picked up, when they were really young, two other churches. And so he is, if you will, an itinerant preacher. And he's serving more than one congregation. He labored zealously at Laodicea and Hierapolis. And so, I'm going to say of Epaphras that he had a bold, pioneering spirit about him. He wasn't afraid to go out and do something new, blaze a new trail, and yet here he is. He doesn't have to. That's not the only thing that he's willing to do. Here he is, a companion with Paul when Paul is in jail. And what does Paul commend him for? Does he commend him for his pioneering spirit? Look at verse 12. He commends him for agonizing in prayer for you. When we're experiencing difficulty, one of the greatest things that we can know is that somebody's praying for us, earnestly praying for us. And so he's telling these Christians here at Colossae, this man who started the church where you are. And he's now here with me because he feels like he needs to be here. But I want you to know his heart is with you. Because I hear him agonizing constantly, praying to God for you. And is he praying that everything would go well with him and go right? That's not what he's praying. He's praying that they would do right, that they would stand firm. And we need men and women who will agonize in prayer for others, who can be a leader as well as a follower. And then there was Luke. He says, in verse 14, our dear friend Luke, the doctor, sends greetings. And you know a little about Luke. Luke was given by God a gift of helping people physically. He was a doctor. And he used it in a special way for God, didn't he? He used it to serve. And I get the impression that he considered himself Paul's personal physician. He traveled with him. He'll write about his travels. And Luke stayed with Paul when everybody else left him. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 11, he talked about when all the people had left. He said, this one's gone here, this one's gone here, this one's gone here, this one's gone here. And then he'll say, only Luke is with me. And so Luke stayed with him when everybody else was gone. And maybe Paul had some health problems. He says he's an old man. And so very likely, if you've been beaten as many times and shipwrecked and all this, left for dead and so forth, you probably have some health problems, wouldn't you think? And I get the impression that Luke adopted Paul as his primary patient. The kingdom of God, it's not a catch basin for those who can't do anything else. It's a kingdom where people use their incredible talents for serving God. Luke, a man with a gift of healing. And then last of all, sadly, there has to be one in every group, doesn't it? Demas, a man with misplaced love. And Paul mentions Demas as a fellow worker in Philemon 24. And then sorrowfully, and right here, he was with him. But whenever he writes 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 10, he says, Demas has forsaken me. He turned back to the world. For Demas, having loved this present world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. Luke chapter 9, verse 62 says, no one who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is fit for service in the kingdom of God. We've got to stay faithful all the way to the end. And so, at the time of this writing, Demas was his friend. He was there with him. But sometime shortly after this, then Demas made a decision in his life. We don't know what the pressure was. We don't know what precipitated that very poor decision this late in his life. But he made a really poor decision. And so, as we look at Paul's eight companions, I would ask, who does God use? Does he use people with great talent? Yes. Does he use people who are successful? Yes. Does he use people with one talent? Yes. Does he use people who failed before? Yes. God will use anyone and everyone who will turn your life over to him and trust him. Now that, to me, is an encouragement. Because I think about all the things that I ought to be able to do and all the things that I ought to know at this point in my life that I don't. And all the mistakes that I've made and the stupid decisions that I've made in my life. And I'm thankful that God is who He is and that God will use us. So I'm saying to you, don't allow yourself to be discouraged by what other people may say or what they think or what you think they think. Or what you think about yourself. You let God determine your value and your worth. And He never made anybody that He wouldn't use. And so if tonight you're discouraged and you're not using your abilities for the Lord, maybe because you feel like there's not a place for you, maybe because you feel like you can't be as good as somebody else or do as well as somebody else, God didn't create you to be somebody else. He created you to be you with the talents that you have, and He has a place for you in His kingdom, a place of service, while we stand and sing.
Ha ha ha.